Hi, everyone. Welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Nick Berkraut.
And I'm Sophia Simonello.
And today we have a really exciting pod. We'll be talking about a lot of the movies coming to theaters and streaming this fall. We're doing a fall 2024 movie preview. Lots of movies. We kind of do this every year and every season, but it's going to be just rattling off names, and I'm excited to chat about them. Maybe see a little bit how we think about awards potential. But to do so, we have a really special guest. His name is Benjamin Van Hoos. He's the associate editor of movies at People. Ben, thanks for joining us. This is so exciting.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's an exciting lineup we have, for sure.
We're so happy to have you on today. And we'll just be going through, Nick, like you said, September through December. All of our most anticipated releases, some of the major ones, some awards contenders, and some smaller titles, too, that have premiered at Sundance and Telluride and other festivals throughout the year or that are still forthcoming. But Ben, before we dig into the movies, we have a question we love to ask our guests, which is, what are you wild for right now? It can be anything from a reality show to a book to a movie.
I feel like I'm always wild about anything Nicole Kidman has, which is good for me because there's a new thing every 2 weeks that she's done. So I did already binge The Perfect Couple, which maybe, I don't know if I'd say it's among her best, but it was definitely addictive. And then we have Baby Girl that we'll be talking about. There's just, she's always giving us something, I feel like.
She is. And she truly is the only person I feel like who could have a show like that with those wigs and win the Volpe Cup at the same time. That's the power of Nicole Kidman.
Yes, there's nothing that woman cannot do.
And now at AMC, it's like we get a different opener every week, and I never know which one we're going to get. So it's kind of exciting that way, too.
She made a new one, or is it like a variation?
There's a second one, but there's like the shortened cut of part one and two. So it's like, What are we getting today? Are they trying to rush through the sequence? Like, how much Nicole are we getting before the show?
Yes, you cannot show up late. You got to catch that every movie. Yeah.
The fact that I want to get AMC A-list just for Nicole Kidman in the ad, because I have the Alamo Drafthouse pass just because it's easier for me and where I live. But I always think about that. I'm like, I could improve my movie going experience with AMC A-list, one, because it's cheaper, but two, Nicole Kidman.
The powers, yes.
Yeah. Well, I think let's dig right into this. So we're going to go month by month, movie by movie here, and just talk about how we feel about them, if we're excited about them, any possible awards potential. The first movie for September just came out, actually. It's Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, which is directed by Tim Burton. This is the sequel, of course, to Beetlejuice, a movie that I grew up with. So I was a little bit hesitant, I would say, about the sequel, but this opened the Venice Film Festival out of competition. It stars Michael Keaton, Winona Ryder, Jenna Ortega, and more. And this is about the Dietz family. They return home after Charles Dietz's unexpected death, and their lives are, of course, turned upside down when Astrid releases Beetlejuice. So, Nick, you haven't seen this yet, correct?
Correct. I'm assuming I will. It's one of the biggest releases this month. It's one of the biggest sequels we'll be getting. We'll be talking about some other big ones soon. But the original, obviously, you know, the dinner sequence is iconic. I'm curious if they have anything like that in replicating the experience of Beetlejuice that you guys can talk about. But it was never like a favorite, but it's very Tim Burton. So I'm hoping he does a good job of like just enriching this movie with his directorial charm.
I think that is where it shines. Like, he gets to like fully go into his world and unleash that. So it didn't feel like he had any like guardrails. So that was fun to watch.
I think so too. And there are some good musical numbers in it that harken back to the original, I thought. I also thought Jenna Ortega was a really good fit for the sequel and works perfectly as Winona Ryder's daughter. The star, though, for me was the star of the first movie, Catherine O'Hara. Anytime that woman appears, I am just fully locked into her comedy. She can really do no wrong in my eyes. And it's a very over-the-top role, but she, I think, nails it.
Yeah, she stole it from me, too. I was ready to write it off as, like, another Moira Rose, like, rendition, but it really is a separate, like, quirkiness that works.
Yeah, and I feel like overall, I was surprised that I didn't dislike it, because I think watching the trailer, I thought, oh, no, are we getting this rough Tim Burton that we've had the past few years, where some of his movies have been a little bit unwatchable, but it felt closer, I think, to the Tim Burton style that we like.
I mean, the story itself was a little thin, but it was like just a fun romp to be in that world again. And it's forgettable, but you can watch it every year, you know, nothing to be embarrassed about.
Does Gina Davis make like a surprise cameo?
No.
I don't know how their characters ended in the first movie anyway.
Well,
they do have to explain them away, because like the ghosts are trapped at the house. So why aren't they there? So
right.
They just have like a throwaway line where it's like, oh, they found a loophole. They got away.
They're free now. My favorite like funny part of the movie, or just inclusion, is Monica Bellucci's character, who was absolutely, you know, not needed in this story, like at all. She just is really, I think, there to look beautiful. And I'm fine with that. But it's just funny because she and Tim Burton are together in real life, of course. So it was just funny that he had to put her into this movie as just this like beautiful ex-wife of Beetlejuice who wants to get him back. But that storyline doesn't really come together at all. It's just fun.
I'm convinced that he just wanted to do like a live action Corpse Bride like aesthetic with her. So just threw that in. But yeah, it didn't really add up to much to me.
Yeah.
We haven't even talked about Michael Keaton, who, if you think about it, he's really not in it that much, but it leaves such an impression because he's wild and over the top.
I agree. I thought he was great, just like in the first movie. I feel like it's just a top tier comedic performance. He really brought that character back, and I love Michael Keaton in this role. I'm so glad that he came back for this. He brought like this a similar style of humor from the first movie, but he also cranked it up a little bit for the new version in this new style.
The fact that it's just like a silly comedy and there's so much death and gore and like darkness, it's just, I think that's impressive in its own.
Me too. And before we move on to the substance, Nick, your favorite, Willem Dafoe, is also great in this.
He's like in every movie we're talking about today. It's kind of crazy. He's always there. Well, moving on to The Substance, another very dark film, this time body horror. It won Best Screenplay at Cannes. I am very excited for this. MUBI is distributing. It comes out on September 20th in theaters. It's directed by Coralie Farja, stars Demi Moore, Margaret Qualley, and more. It's about this laboratory that offers Elizabeth Sparkle, played by Demi Moore, I think that name is phenomenal, this miraculous substance that if she injects it into herself, she'll become, quote, the best version of herself, younger, more beautiful, and more perfect. So I think the initial reactions from Cannes, and we'll be getting others very soon. I am very excited. I love this like Cronenbergian world that we're in. And I think Demi Moore, from, again, those early reviews, she takes it there. And I just want to see her go crazy, because I think she can do that really well. And just her resurgence into Hollywood. Come on, let's have it.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this one. I'm scared, but I feel like this topic is so timely with all of the out there beauty trends we're seeing, and how even like on TikTok now, I feel like 12-year-old girls have like 10-step skincare routines, which was just not the way it was when I was in middle school. So I think the way that people are getting more and more obsessed with beauty, with anti-aging, this is going to be a movie that people talk about. I feel like Margaret Qualley has just been doing really incredible work lately too. I loved her in the Netflix show Made, which I feel like 10 people watched, but I thought she was really incredible in that. So
yeah,
I can't wait to see this.
That show is phenomenal. And I mean, what was that movie she had? It was like all in a hotel room, Sanctuary or something like mm-hmm. that. That was very...
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I'm a big horror fan, so this is off mm-hmm. my list, The Substance. But I'm a little worried because my one squeamish thing is like medical body horror, like needles. Mm-hmm. And I've already heard from a colleague who got to see this, and he is also a horror person, and even he was shocked by what was shown. So I'm a little wary of it. And another thing about this movie is Demi Moore, I realize my touchstone for her as an actress is kind of embarrassing. It's as Miley Cyrus's mom in that one movie, LOL.
Oh my God.
I hope it doesn't get me fired because she's like one of our biggest favorite stars. But I need to do like a history of Demi Moore and like see her best movies because I don't know mm-hmm. much, but I know of her and I'm excited to see her in this like meta role and very out there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how, if at all, this movie will connect to LOL. I feel like as far as The Substance goes, though, with the Oscars and with Beetlejuice, really, thinking about horror-adjacent films, like Beetlejuice being more of a horror comedy and The Substance being really out there. Nick, you mentioned Cronenberg body horror. It's always questionable at the Oscars, but I feel like for makeup and hairstyling, that could be a category where we see one or both of them pop up or at least enter the conversation. But I'm going to be rooting for Demi Moore, even though I haven't seen it yet.
I feel like the Academy is just not going to be on board with something as shocking, but maybe they'll want to have the redemption arc for her or tribute.
It also makes me think of Julia Ducournau with Titan and that movie not making it in to international feature, being chosen even by the country. So I think mm-hmm. maybe too shocking. I mean, those are the vibes that I'm getting from this movie, which I love. I'm excited for, but the Academy may not be.
Well, speaking of an Academy favorite, but one that I don't think will translate this year, we have Megalopolis. This will be in theaters on September 27th, released by Lionsgate. There's already been so much drama with this movie. It premiered at Cannes. This is, of course, Francis Ford Coppola's $120 million self-funded via his winery. Over 3-hour epic. It stars Adam Driver, Aubrey Plaza, Shia LaBeouf, Natalie Emmanuel. Oh, where to even begin with this one?
First of all, good luck describing it because I've heard that it's like impossible to sum up. So
I know. And I just love the character names. Like Aubrey Plaza being Wow Platinum. That was the first detail that I heard where I just thought I need to see whatever is going on here. But Adam Driver plays a character named Caesar, which is just already
mm-hmm.
what are we doing here? And he is a genius artist who seeks to leap into a utopian idealistic future, and his opposition, Mayor Franklin Cicero, who remains committed to a regressive status quo, perpetuating greed, special interests, and partisan warfare. That's the description we have. Still doesn't really tell us too much. I'm excited to see it because of that trailer that came out with all of the fake quotes about his old movies that they had to pull. There's one every year that has a lot of drama around it, but this one, I think, takes the cake.
Yeah, our friends at Lionsgate have an uphill battle for sure of like getting this one out there. And I've heard something, rumblings about there's like a interactive portion where they like halt the movie mm-hmm. and then something happens. I don't know if we can say, but something happens in the middle of the movie at certain screenings, and I just picture like an AMC worker having to like stop it and go in front of everybody. Is it like from the studio they're sending people? I don't know how it'll work.
Right, because they can't send someone to every single public screening, so I don't really know how that's going to work. But also what I always think about that is this like fourth wall break moment, and then either a studio rep or someone from the audience, who knows how they'll do it. But I always think, like, living in New York, if that happened in a movie theater, I think people would freak out. No one would know what to do.
Yeah, they almost need like a trigger warning or something, being like, something is going to happen, remain calm.
You know, I've seen recently, like with Beetlejuice, and some of the early The Front Room screeners, that film is also coming out this month. but that they have people in the audience dressed up as these main characters, kind of taunting audiences before the movie. And that is really scary. But thinking of this interactive portion, I think that's becoming more widespread too. And incorporating that into the movie itself, hearing about this from Can, I was like, yeah, how are they going to do this? And I can also think of, and this is just hilarious, of like, if they have to do this at every screening, and someone at some weekday matinee is like the only person in the theater, and this worker comes in, is like, how embarrassing. But could be really funny, just like this whole campaign and rollout and development has been.
And Coppola posted something on Instagram this morning that was like the decades long saga of making Megalopolis. And it takes you through a timeline starting, I believe, in the 80s, of just the inception of this idea, the original actors that he thought of. It's wild. So I'm glad this is finally coming out.
Did you see he also said he intentionally cast like quote unquote canceled actors to make a woke movie, as he says? I feel like this is just something you can't miss. Like, everybody has to say they saw this. I don't want to discount it. I'm sure there's some value, but it seemed like a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like you said, our friends at Lionsgate have an uphill battle.
Which is funny that you mention the woke part, because I just watched the first two episodes of English Teacher. And like, one of the first lines is how the kids have like circled back on being anti-woke. So I wonder if that honestly could help a movie like this that is so wonky to begin with. We'll see. I mean, it's coming out in IMAX too. It's honestly one of the only reasons I do want to see it, is like on a huge screen. So I'll be there. We will be there. A very different film, The Wild Robot. This is an animated film from DreamWorks Universal coming out at the end of the month on the 27th in theaters. It's premiering at TIFF. It's directed by Chris Sanders and stars or is voiced by Lupita Nyong'o, Pedro Pascal, Catherine O'Hara, again, Stephanie Hsu, and Mark Hamill. It's about, on this deserted island, this robot is shipwrecked, whose name is Roz, and they must learn to adapt to its new surroundings. They build relationships with native animals and soon develop a parental bond with an orphaned gosling. We have big animated films coming out, you know, towards the end of the year, every year, and it's like, could this win the animated feature Oscar over something that maybe Disney is releasing? We'll be talking about one of theirs later on, but this does look like a really cool theatrical experience, an emotional one for me, definitely. But I'm excited. What do you both think about this?
I'm just interested because I love when actors get these animated roles and they kind of take it seriously and do something creative. They're not just like putting their name and just insert their voice that we all know. So Lupita actually said that she like had a vocal polyp from doing this like super positive robot voice for so long that she had to go on like vocal rest. And so she really like dedicated to it. So that in itself makes me excited. But the animation style looks unique. And I don't know, that category is so stacked this year. I don't even know how it'll shape up.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the five nominees end up being. But this is definitely a top tier contender for sure. We also have Inside Out 2, of course, which has made so much money this year. But I love the animation style of this just from the trailer alone. And I feel like people at TIFF will really like it. That feels like the right place to premiere it too. And I'm loving the year that Lupita Nyong'o is having already with A Quiet Place Day 1, too. I thought she was fantastic in that. And it was just good to see her come back. I think, too, just to rattle off some other September releases that we have coming, and then we can talk about these collectively or maybe call out any we're excited for. We have The Front Room, My Old Ass, His Three Daughters, A Different Man, Speak No Evil, Transformers 1, Wolves, Will and Harper, and Apartment 7A. Do any of these jump out to you guys as ones you're excited for, ones you've already seen maybe that you want to recommend?
Well, I think everybody should check out My Old Ass. That one was very like charming. It's a like a queer coming of age romance and also just like finding yourself and what would you tell your younger self and all these decisions. It has Aubrey Plaza, of course, in a smaller role. But the lead, the real like breakout is Maisie Stella, who was a child star from the TV show Nashville that she did with her sister Lennon. But yeah, she's just so natural, funny. Like the movie could not be better, I don't think.
I love to hear that because this trailer always makes me tear up when I see it. It just has that like heartwarming quality and it looks like a really fun, funny coming of age story. And I love Aubrey Plaza too. So I'm really excited to see this one.
Does Maddie Ziegler have like a really small role in this? I didn't realize by the trailer. I don't know if she was in it or not.
It is a very small part. Yeah.
Okay.
Of these other ones, I know Will and Harper, the trailer alone made me cry. So I don't know. I'm going to be a puddle of tears for that one. Apartment 7A, I don't know why we're touching Rosemary's Baby, but maybe I'll give it a chance.
Right. That's the one where every time I see or have seen any little bit of news related to it, like a poster, casting, I'm like, why? Rosemary's Baby is my favorite horror movie. I don't want anything touching it. And it's still one of those where even though it was made in the late 60s, if you watch it now, it is still just as relevant. Like those themes really hold up. And Mia Farrow's performance, Ruth Gordon, it's like, let's not touch it. We don't need this.
I think if anybody can save it, it's Julia Garner and Diane Weiss, though. So I'm of anything about that most excited for them. Do I think we need prequels on old horror classics? Definitely not. But, you know, maybe it will be better than Speak No Evil, which is a movie, you know, we had the original Danish film 2 years ago, and we're already doing an American remake where this trailer that we've seen nonstop before every single movie, I feel like tells you the big twists in it too. And it's like, why are we doing this? I mean, James McAvoy can play any evil villain on any day of the week, but who wants this? I'm sorry.
Yeah, it makes me feel like too, like studios don't trust American audiences with that type of horror, because that movie, I watch a lot of horror, one of my favorite genres, Speak No Evil, is not for the faint of heart. Mm-hmm. It is rough.
It sticks with you, like that ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like this one will, based on the trailer, probably pull some punches, but I don't know. I'll probably save this one for October, just when I'm going through all my new horror movies that I haven't seen. I'll just add it to the list there. I'm really excited for people to see His Three Daughters. It is a really beautiful grief drama that's coming to Netflix. It stars Carrie Coon, who's one of my favorite actresses working, Elizabeth Olsen, and Natasha Lyonne. Natasha Lyonne is fantastic in this. It is a really, I think, different type of role for her, but all three of them, it feels like you are watching a play. And I mean that in a complimentary way. It feels, I think, just like this really profound film about these three women and how they are experiencing grief. And it's with the upcoming death of their father. So they're basically planning for that to take place.
I have a weird soft spot for like a niche genre of like siblings reuniting or like coming together, like those kinds of movies I find interesting.
The other animated one here is Transformers 1, which I'm just curious. We have others that we'll talk about as well. I'm like, will these show up at the Oscars? But it's also another huge voice cast. Chris Hemsworth, Brian Tyree Henry, Scarlett Johansson, Keegan-Michael Key, Steve Buscemi, Lawrence Fishburne, John Hamm. I don't know. I mean, you know, it could be really big with kids and fans of the Transformers franchise. Going animated, they haven't had an animated feature or entry since, I think, the 80s. Who knows? It could be a fun movie to go see on a day off or as a matinee.
And I think the studio, it's Paramount, right? I think they're very confident in it. And they're even doing the press screenings in 3D. So it's like they're a little more excited about it than you might expect. So I think it could be a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And movies like this, I feel like you don't see trailers for in the movie theater. So I think when I first did, I was a little thrown aback by that too. Something like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like that did really well. So yeah, I am pretty hopeful for this one too.
And then just touching on the other two quickly, Wolves, which has George Clooney and Brad Pitt. People were really liking it out of Venice, but it's part of that weird deal with Apple where it's not going to be in theaters for very long at all. It's just going to be mostly on streaming, which to me, if you have a movie with Brad Pitt and George Clooney, people are going to go see that if you market it correctly. So it's strange that it's just going to have this life on streaming where I'm sure it'll do really well there, but it would have done well in theaters too. But as far as Oscar potential goes for what's here, I would say that A Different Man probably also has some with Sebastian Stan and Adam Pearson. Also, Renata Reinsva, our favorite from Worst Person in the World. I'm excited to see this. I've heard nothing but great things here too.
I'm curious, is Sebastian going to like push for this movie or his Trump movie? I feel like he has two acclaimed performances to pick.
He does, I know. And The Apprentice was just a Telluride again, and that will come out through Briarcliff, I believe, in October. So that, to me, would be more of your standard Oscar push, right? He's playing a real person. Jeremy Strong as Roy Cohn has also gotten raves for his performance. So that one does feel like what would, I think, be celebrated by the Academy more than something like A Different Man. But it's also wrapped up in controversy because it's also an election year. And do people want to really see a movie about a young Trump? So we'll see. He's having an interesting year, though, for sure.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about like the voting season is going to be after the election. So I guess results of that could change people's minds.
Jeez, wow. With him not winning actor at Cannes, I don't know if that was like upsetting to him or if maybe he was expecting something like that. I don't think that necessarily, you know, decides what happens with the Oscars at all. There's a big time difference there, but who knows? I mean, he could push for makeup and hairstyling for A Different Man and go actor for The Apprentice, something like that. Yeah. Well, moving on to October, we have a lot of releases here. The biggest one, I think, that we have been expecting and a huge trailer, Joker, Folie à Deux, in theaters on October 4th, released by Warner Brothers. This premiered at Venice. Joker doing more than $1 billion, just insane. This one's also directed by Todd Phillips, largely starring Joaquin Phoenix and Lady Gaga. So it continues Arthur Fleck's story when he meets Harley Quinn at Arkham. And when they're released, the two of them embark on a doomed romantic misadventure. Early reviews were not very nice about this movie. I think still praising Lady Gaga. I didn't hear much about Joaquin, but I think on the whole, there were a lot of disappointments, which is kind of shocking, but I honestly still think the box office is going to be really high for this movie.
Oh, yeah. And it's yet another movie where it's a musical, and but they don't want you to call it that. There's songs and dance and all this stuff. I don't get this push for marketing movies that are musicals as like hiding the fact that they are.
I agree. It's such a weird thing that's happening and that's happened for a while now with musicals. And they've even convinced Lady Gaga not to do that, because at the press conference at Venice, it was like, you are describing a musical right now, but you're saying it's not a musical. And I just feel like if people know Lady Gaga's in a movie, they probably want her to be singing. They want it to have a musical component to it. So, yeah, I don't know why they're hiding that. But yeah, it looks very much like he's leaning into, I don't know, riffing on Scorsese's New York, New York, or The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, or La La Land even. So I don't know about this. I think we can count on it making a lot of money. The saddest thing I saw about this coming out of Venice, though, was that Lady Gaga is wasted. She's not in as much of the movie as we want. So the only reason I was really anticipating this was because I love a Lady Gaga campaign. I love seeing her at roundtables, and I think she's a really compelling actress, but if she's not in the movie very much. I did not like the first Joker, so I don't really know what to think of this.
Does that help her chances? Like, could she push to supporting and, like, have some more room to
honestly own that? Yeah.
I think so. Supporting's kind of wide open right now compared to lead. Best Actress is pretty stacked.
I'm not a huge Joker fan, but I'm happy to see it. And I think it's interesting to have somebody who just won Best Actor play that character again. And, like, will he deliver and be celebrated the same way? We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I recognize two Todds, Todd Field and Todd Haynes, not Todd Phillips. So we will see how it goes. The next movie we have on the list is actually one I just saw at Telluride. That's Saturday Night. This is Jason Reitman's take on the first episode of Saturday Night Live, really the countdown to it. It's going to be coming out end of September in New York and LA and then early October everywhere else. So it's going to be staggering its release that way. It premiered really positively at Telluride. It has a huge ensemble cast. Gabriel LaBelle, Cooper Hoffman, Rachel Sennett, Corey Michael Smith, J.K. Simmons. There's so many people in this movie. It's sort of like a scavenger hunt. People will just pop up and you're like, oh, I know them from this and this and this. You know, what was interesting about it, and we'll talk about it more next week on our Telluride recap episode, this played so well in the room. The world premiere was on a Saturday night, so it was people I think were very excited about that, and it connected really well to the themes in the film. But it is, I think, one of those movies that I can see a lot of general audiences really responding to. It's very fun. I'm not a huge Reitman fan, so I expected to not like it, and I enjoyed it more than I expected. So I'll just say that. But what do you guys think about this one, maybe, and how it could be in the Oscar race? Or, yeah, are you excited to see it?
I am not that excited, but my question is, do they take it, like, so serious? Like, is it an Aaron Sorkin kind of, like, take on this? That's my only worry.
There we go. There's the word.
So it does have stretches where it sort of feels like it's getting to that, which I didn't like as much. I think that the men in the movie, the male characters, the writing is much more focused, and the women, you know, Jane Curtin, characters like that, Gilda Radner, they feel like not enough attention was put on them, which I didn't like as much. But it does have that kind of self-serious Aaron Sorkin quality at times. When it gets into that, that's when it's less successful for me. When it feels like he's trying to make a Paul Thomas Anderson sort of Boogie Nights or a Goodfellas type of film where it has a lot of tracking shots and whip pans and it's leaning on those 70s aesthetics, I think that's when it's more successful. A few supporting performances are also great. Dylan O'Brien as Dan Aykroyd, fantastic. Corey Michael Smith as Chevy Chase, uncanny. If you told me that they somehow resurrected Chevy Chase from the 70s, that version of him, and put him in this movie, I would have believed you. It's that close.
Is this, like, affiliated with the real SNL? Like, are these real life figures going to be upset by anything? Are they going to be out there supporting it?
Oh, I'm so curious about that. I wonder how they will react to the portrayal. It's all pretty positive. I'll say the jokes are of the time. Like, they don't, I thought they were going to sanitize them a little bit for a modern audience, but they really don't. I think the actors, the real actors, will be okay with it, but that's an interesting thing to consider.
I know Lauren's not a producer, but SNL Studios is, so I kind of assume they had to okay everything before it went through. Otherwise, we would have had a big scandal and lawsuit on our hands, I bet. So I'm also excited or intrigued by, you know, we have, like, Willem Dafoe again and J.K. Simmons, John Baptiste, who, you know, is big with the Oscars and the Academy. We talked about him last season with his documentary, but he composed the score and I heard good responses about the music itself. So I'm intrigued there. And then I'm also, you know, something I always think about ever since we covered Mean Girls on After Dark is how Janice Ian, that name came from the performer who was on the first episode of SNL. So they got Naomi McPherson of Muna to portray her. And I'm excited to see that. And I like that connection there.
there's a brief moment that's a nod to Janice Ian. But so many things are so quick because it feels like it's trying to capture so many different things that it doesn't give you time to really breathe or spend enough time with the characters who matter. I think sometimes there are some exceptions to that, but yeah.
Real-time movies just stress me out. I get like when I'm down, I'm just, it sucks me in and I get anxiety. And but that's the point, I guess.
It's not as irritating as like a Birdman. I'll say that.
Gabriel LaBelle, everybody go watch Snack Shack on now streaming on Prime Video. I love it. I'm excited to see him. Our next film, a very different film, We Live in Time, which just premiered at TIFF. This will be distributed by A24 in theaters on the 11th. It's directed by John Crowley and stars Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh. A cancer movie about cancer. I mean, we've seen them before and I think they're effective and they work and they really create this emotional, very human response. So I'm so excited for this. But it's about Almut and Tobias, who are brought together by a surprise encounter that changes their lives. And as they embark on this path challenged by the limits of time, they learn to cherish each moment of their unconventional love story. I think having these two actors as our leads, I am really excited to see them. But then also John, who directed Brooklyn, which I absolutely loved with Saoirse Ronan. This is one of my most anticipated of the episode. I cannot wait for this. And the reviews were really good as well.
Yeah, this looks like a very like guaranteed cry. Like, it's a tearjerker. And I just hope it doesn't veer too far into like saccharine, like overly sappy. But I'm down, and Florence is never bad in a movie. She's always giving it her all. So, and I heard she shaved her head for real for the role, so clearly she's passionate about it and really committed. So that in itself makes me preceded to see it. But I'm a little weary of the tearjerker genre.
Yeah, especially the British ones. I wonder if it's going to lean into Richard Curtis territory a little bit, like About Time. But I am a sucker for them still. Like, even if I see the problems that are there in the screenplay, or if it is, you know, too sappy sweet, anything like that, I do know it's like, when I go see this, I'm going to bring the tissues and just prepare for a good cry. And I have to see that horse from the merry-go-round, that meme that's going around from this movie. I just need to see it on the big screen.
Is that real, like in the movie, or is that like a poster snafu or something?
Apparently it's real. Apparently it's in the movie, and it's not just, I don't know, Canva gone awry or something like that.
Someone asked Andrew about this on the carpet, and he was like, that effing horse. He's like, I don't want to talk about it.
Of course not. So let's move on to another big movie that's coming out in October, Anora. This has made the film festival rounds so far, won the Palme d'Or at Cannes. This is going to be distributed by Neon. It'll be in theaters October 18th. This was directed by Sean Baker and stars Mikey Madison, Mark Edelstein, Yura Borisov, and more. I saw this at Telluride and absolutely loved it. This is my favorite Sean Baker movie, and I feel like the Mikey Madison performance is just one of my favorites of the year so far. She's incredibly wonderful as Anora, who is this kind of sour and sweet character. She's very fun to watch. She's a stripper, dancer, sex worker who lives in Brighton Beach, Coney Island area. And she, one night at the club, meets this 21-year-old son of a Russian oligarch, and they get married in Vegas. And his parents are obviously not happy that their son got married. And it just becomes sort of this Uncut Gems, After Hours style adventure where they are trying to find him because he's run away once he finds out his parents are coming to America. So it's very, very fun. And I loved it. It has this like very, I don't know, warm quality to it too. And it's hilarious. It feels like a screwball comedy at times. And the ending is one of the best endings. It made me cry.
this high praise. Now I'm all suddenly re-excited for this. But Sean Baker is one of my favorites. The performances like he could get out of like trained actors or new actors, they're always so genuine. So the fact that you say it's his best yet, but I'm sold.
I need to probably tone down the hyperbole with Mikey Madison specifically, but I just loved her in this. I need her in the best actress conversation all season.
Ever since I saw her in Better Things, I'm just like, I knew she was going to be somebody, and then she was in Scream and I think really overperforms in that movie. And so I think this is just the next biggest step for her. Could like really solidify her career as nearly an A-list star, which is really exciting. I've tried to avoid this trailer too. Once things are like really hyped, I'm like, okay, I want to try to go into this movie knowing as little as possible. And I can't wait. I didn't really know it to be a comedy beforehand. So I'm excited for something like that. And those movie references you made, love. I'm so excited.
I hope I didn't hype it too much, but I do think you'll really like it.
If anything, if this movie makes people go back and check out Sean Baker's other projects, that's exciting in itself.
Can he get another actor nominated? I hope so. Again, Willem Dafoe. This is number three of the day.
Project. That was so good. That was probably my number one of that year. That was so good.
He's great in that movie.
Mm-hmm. And he does have really memorable endings. So I'm really excited for something like that too. That always just like is the nice cherry on top of a great movie experience. Some other releases we have this month: Piece by Piece, Flight Risk, Smile 2, Venom, The Last Dance, Memoir of a Snail, Nickel Boys, and Woman of the Hour, Anna Kendrick's directorial debut, which will be on Netflix on October 16th. I'm excited about this one in particular. I heard great things. And it's about a true story about a serial killer who showed up on this TV show, The Dating Game. So kind of spooky, but I'm excited what Kendrick can put into this.
I think that one will be a big hit, especially on Netflix. Like a lot of people don't know about this story and just her big moment. Like you said, the buzz is good with that one.
Yeah. And Nickel Boys, I really loved. This movie is very challenging. Not everyone is going to like it, which I think you can say about, I mean, any movie that we've talked about, but this one just has a very avant-garde, bold approach to telling the story. Ramel Ross is adapting the Colson Whitehead novel, and it's told exclusively through the first person point of view. I have never seen a movie like this. It reminded me actually a lot, just in terms of the feelings that it evoked, of The Tree of Life and Zone of Interest. It's just very, very different, very beautiful. The cinematography is stunning, by Joe Moffré, who did All Dirt Roads Taste of Salt last year. So I recommend this to anyone. I think it's just a beautiful, very affecting film, but also knowing that it is totally different from anything else you're going to see this year and maybe that you've ever seen before.
And peep our very own Sophia on the poster in the trailer. What?
Wild.
That's incredible.
It's crazy. I went to change my letterboxed poster of it and saw my name on one of the options. And it's like, this is too much to process.
Oh my God. No, that's insanely amazing. We'll be talking about this one on one of our New York Film Festival recaps, or when we review those films, possibly with Anora too. But these will be big festival players, big Oscar players. So we'll be revisiting those. One that maybe is Piece by Piece, this Lego movie of Pharrell's life. I don't know if this is for me, but apparently it will be a really big movie. I feel like it's just being hyped so much.
This one was filmed like as a documentary, right? And then they animated over it.
Okay.
I think it's a cool concept, but justice for the Lego movie, which I thought was amazing. And didn't that not get any nominations?
Famously snubbed. going into November now, we have Conclave. This will be in theaters November 1st. This is from Focus Features, also premiered at Telluride. Edward Berger's follow-up to All Quiet on the Western Front. It stars Ralph Fiennes, Isabella Rossellini, Stanley Tucci, John Lithgow. And this is based on the Robert Harris book where Ralph Fiennes plays Cardinal Lawrence, and he is overseeing the conclave, which is the process for selecting a new pope. This movie is fascinating. It has one of the most bizarre endings that will definitely get people talking. I laughed a lot. It is not intentionally a comedy, but there were moments where I thought of RuPaul's Drag Race while watching it.
What?
I'm sure that was intended.
Oh, God. Don't even give RuPaul the idea of becoming the next pope. Don't do it.
Well, I like, again, the parts where it thinks about like the pageantry of the Catholic Church and I don't know, all of the drama, those are my favorite parts. And I'll talk about it more when we do our Telluride recap, the specific Drag Race moments that I was thinking of, but I do not know why my brain went there. It was just like, oh, this is a Ben Delacreme moment in particular about a cardinal. It's
what?
Wild.
Oh, stop. Oh, my God.
From a like log line level, I'm not really into this as a movie, but all this praise I'm hearing about it, I'm going to check it out. And I was also shocked to learn that He Who Must Not Be Named, Ralph, has never won an Oscar. So maybe this will be his chance for that.
Yeah. I just am curious how general audiences will react to it because it's not so much the movie I was expecting it to be.
I think having this, you know, movie about an experience that we follow on TV with the smoke a lot, you know, when this happens is so monumental. But then the trailer we got from that and just having Edward Berger at the helm really has me confused on what this is. And then you saying it's a comedy at times, you know.
I mean, it's not supposed to be.
No, but I totally understand what you mean by that. So, you know, it makes me think back to picking that film on our fantasy draft. And I think me feeling, you know, at the time I kind of wanted to double or make our pick all film Emilia Perez and not Conclave. And maybe I wasn't totally wrong about that feeling. We're going to talk about that movie very soon, but I'm weary. I think now that, you know, reviews and responses have come out about this movie.
You'll see.
Another movie that maybe is comedic in ways or, you know, just the vibes of recent Robert Zemeckis films, for better or worse, we have Here being distributed by TriStar Pictures out on November 1st. It's premiering at the AFI Film Festival. It stars Tom Hanks, Robin Wright. So it's somewhat of a reunion for the Forrest Gump cast and crew, which is exciting, but it's a very unique story. It has the viewpoint of one place in time over multiple generations of couples and families that inhabit this same home and space over the course of a century. I'm intrigued. I'm interested. When I first heard about this, I was like, oh, this is going to be a riot. And the trailer has me really excited for it. Just one of those oddball movies that, I don't know, lightens things up a little bit during a serious award season. Maybe it will have potential if the Academy, you know, loves this one viewpoint kind of story. Again, it's just something unique that we don't usually see.
That fixed POV could either be amazing and like add to the story, or it could be so frustrating and like, isn't it kind of the opposite of like a cinematic experience? Like if I want to go see a play, I'll see the play. But so as long as it really ties into the themes and it adds to it, I'm down. But also just the de-aging gives me pause and like cartoony looking younger Tom Hanks. Mm-hmm. But I'll see it for sure. The 30 years of Forrest Gump alone is exciting.
Yeah, I feel really similarly. The stationary camera on one room just feels like such a gimmick. And the de-aging, I just don't trust Zemeckis with, I don't know, that look in a movie. I mean, think about how creepy Tom Hanks is in something like The Polar Express, or, you know, how scary some of his movies can get when you look at the VFX.
You've had so many nightmares of The Polar Express. I thought I successfully blocked that out of my mind.
Yeah, sorry to unleash them again. But, you know, it's just like, I think that's my fear with it. But I'm morbidly curious. Like, that's mm-hmm. one that I need to see.
I think also it being an adaptation of a comic is not something we normally see. So maybe that's where that vision comes from. Maybe I'll have to read it before we see it. We'll have to go together. This would be a great Oscar Wilde laugh.
This would. experience. This would. We have one every year that we see that we just end up laughing about. And our next one we have, this is a big Oscar contender. This is Emilia Perez. This is a Netflix movie. It'll be streaming, and also we'll have a limited theatrical run. So that theatrical run will start November 1st and then followed by streaming on November 13th. This won Best Actress and the Jury Prize at Cannes. The Best Actress win was honestly pretty historic. It's not something that hasn't happened before, but it's pretty rare for multiple actresses to win that prize. Those actresses were Carla Sofia Gascon, Zoe Saldana, Selena Gomez, and Adriana Paz. And this was directed by Jacques Audiard. And this is a wild ride. I don't even think the description really can prepare you for what this movie is. It is a musical about a woman named Rita. She's a lawyer. This is the Zoe Saldana character. And she ends up working with the leader of a criminal organization. And it's, you know, it's a drama. It's a musical, like I said. It's a trans story. It's a family story. There are a lot of different tones at play. My favorite parts of this movie were honestly near the beginning when it feels very campy, thanks to some of Odiard's choices behind the camera. I loved those and how it leaned into that. But yeah, I'm so excited for everyone to see this because I just wonder what the reactions will be. I think it'll be pretty polarizing.
Well, the world wants to know, is this going to be Selena Gomez's nomination? Because so many people have thoughts about her as an actress, but I'm hopeful.
I think she can get into supporting. I think it's definitely possible. And I think Netflix is going to push her there. And with that category being so up in the air, and in flux, I mean, just like we were talking about Lady Gaga, Selena Gomez absolutely has a chance. And she has her own musical number in the film that I think could get her there.
And it's all in Spanish, right? It's a French movie in Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
New billionaire, star of Only Murders in the Building. I'm excited for her, but I'm excited for all of the actresses. We heard amazing things about Carla out of Cannes and Zoe. And again, I'm intrigued. I don't really know what to make of it. There was a great trailer with one of the songs mm-hmm. from the film, but I'm just like, oh my God, I love the vibe from that.
And Zoe Saldana herself, just, she's underappreciated, even in Avatar giving it her all. So I'm hopeful that this gives her her due.
She's free of James Cameron, and she has my favorite moment in the movie. It's this great musical number where she is in this fabulous red suit. It's the best.
Next we have, I would say, our biggest release date of the year. This is the next Barbenheimer. We have Gladiator 2 and Wicked. I don't think the combined names work as well, so I'm not going to try it, but first, let's talk about Gladiator 2, released by Paramount, directed by Ridley Scott, just like the original. It stars Paul Mescal, Denzel Washington, Connie Nielsen, Joseph Quinn, and Pedro Pascal, again, mentioned earlier. I think the story is phenomenal because of how it catches up after the first movie. We have some characters reprising their roles, but a lot of these characters are new. So it's years after Maximus's death. Lucius now enters the Colosseum after the powerful emperors of Rome conquer his home. And now it's kind of his story mirroring that of Russell Crowe from Maximus from the first movie. So I think there are a lot of interesting elements. I love all of these actors. The only question I have, because it's an unnamed role as of right now, is Matt Lucas starring, and I have no idea what he's going to be doing. You know, he makes me think of Alice in Wonderland, that remake, but then also the Great British Bake Off. And I'm like, what is he doing in the Colosseum?
Not you bringing up the worst possible component of this movie.
I'm sorry. I just had to warn you.
I didn't know this. And I'm going to instead talk about Paul Mescal and how excited I am for him to be in this type of role. He's done so many sensitive dramas, and I'm excited to see him step into this leading man role, this action star role. And also Denzel, because Denzel Washington in this trailer is electric. He is like a magnet pulling you in every scene in this trailer, every moment. He was a standout for me. So I can't wait to see Paul Mescal and Denzel interact too, and what that relationship is like on screen.
I think it's surprising to know that this will be like Paul's introduction to a lot of people in the mainstream. Like, we of course know and love him, but I feel like he hasn't had that big movie that has wide appeal. So people might not know him yet, and they're going to see him in this. And the big budget, the scale of it all, it's a theater-worthy experience, but hopefully it's not a disaster.
Yeah. With Ridley Scott, it's such a gamble when you think of his recent movies like Napoleon, House of Gucci. We just don't know, but I'm hoping this will be a return to how audiences felt when they saw Gladiator. And I think that Thanksgiving time release window will be good for it too. And I think going right over to Wicked, this is another movie that, like, people, yes, I think are hiding a little bit that it's a musical, but the bigger thing is that they're hiding that it's a part one. So that will be interesting. This is directed by John M. Chu and stars Cynthia Erivo, Ariana Grande, Jonathan Bailey, Michelle Yeoh, Jeff Goldblum. Really stacked cast. This is based on the book and the Broadway musical. And this is about, of course, a young woman named Elphaba who forges an unlikely profound friendship with Glinda. And this is a Wizard of Oz prequel, really. So I think it'll connect also nicely to that and its anniversary this year, turning 85. So that will be really cool. But what do you guys think about Wicked? Are you excited for this? Are you nervous? How do you feel?
This has been pushed down our throats, I feel like, for years. This yeah. Longest like marketing campaign. I'm excited for it. It looks fun. As long as it's not like that weird Disney Oz the Great and Powerful or whatever that one was.
Yeah.
We'll see. I know I saw people online like commenting on the posters look a little Once Upon a Time-y, like that TV show.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, they do.
But it does look really cool and like a good experience. I'm curious how they'll split it and if it'll feel satisfying as just the part one. And then we have to wait a year for the second one. But I think it has potential. Cynthia is sure to be powerful. And we've already had glimpses of all of her songs. So, yeah, I think it could be fun. And I'm sure it'll be a huge hit, even going up against Gladiator.
Early reviews are really praising Ariana, which I'm very happy about. I think the trailer got me most excited for this movie. Like, yes, we had years ago, Lea Michele was going to star in this movie. But I think what was captured and the hype that they were building, you know, having that Defying Gravity tune playing over the trailer was just awe-inspiring, inspirational, exciting. Also, the fact that they shot a lot of this practically, I think, will help in terms of it looking not like that movie, The Oz and Powerful, even though I think parts of the trailer maybe do err on looking a bit candied and fake. So I'm hoping that's not how it really does look on a big screen. Maybe some of the performances, you know, it's definitely going to air into comedy. I think Ariana does that really well in the trailer, but having people like Bowen Yang, who I like, or her boyfriend Ethan Slater, seeing what he brings to the movie, you know, he's a Broadway star as well. So there are a lot of different elements that could either come together perfectly or feel abrasive. I think after John M. Chu made In the Heights, which I really liked, we talked about on the pod a little bit, I'm hopeful. I think I'm definitely positive about this movie. And I think just, I don't know, living in New York, going to see Broadway shows, having friends that perform on Broadway, it's exciting to see them really hyped about this too. And, you know, not being weary, wanting to go sing. It's going to be a very interactive experience, I think.
I'm just the cynical person, but I'm sure it's going to be a fun.
I'm cynical too, just because of the look of it. And I don't know about like the production design and the visual effects. Like it has that kind of fake candy look to me, like a video game or like a board game come to life, where I'm just a little bit nervous, but you can't really go wrong with Cynthia Erivo singing those songs. So that's what I'm going to cling to.
And our last big release of November is Moana 2, being released by Disney on the 27th. This is directed by Dana Lee Doom Miller, Jason Hand, and David Derrick Jr. It's voiced by Auli Carvalho, The Rock, Nicole Scherzinger, and more. And it continues Moana's journey to the far seas of Oceania after receiving an unexpected call from her wayfinding ancestors. I'm a fan of Moana. I think the soundtrack more so than the movie, but I think it's fun. This is going to be a huge hit for families, and I think another success for Disney. Awards wise, I think it'll definitely be in the conversation with Inside Out 2. If they both aren't, it'll be interesting to see what prevails in the end.
Yeah, I'm mostly excited for this one for the music, because I think the Moana soundtrack, those songs are so catchy. Not one of my most anticipated ones, I think, just because of where my interests lie, but I bet it'll be a big hit.
And it's a different team doing the songs, I think. It's not Lin-Manuel Black, so there's a potential to have a new fun sound to it. But I think the Moana movie is like such a huge streaming phenomenon that, I mean, we know that Disney's doubled down and they're doing a live action version of that. So there is a fan base for this, and it's going to be huge. And just visually, I think the animation is really cool.
Mm-hmm. And just a few others that we have coming in November. We have A Real Pain, Heretic, Red One, and Flow. Flow is Latvia's submission for the Oscars. This is an animated film with a very cute cat. So I can't wait to see this one. I was hoping it was at Telluride, but that will be, I think, in the Oscar race. It'll be interesting to see how an animated film that's mostly a silent film, I've heard, with little dialogue, can perform there. And then A Real Pain also, I think, will be a huge contender come Oscar season. People were loving this at Telluride, and they adjusted the release date. They actually pushed it so it could play a lot of these regional festivals and continue to build momentum. And this is Searchlight. So I think we'll be talking about this one for a very long time, and Kieran Culkin specifically.
I think the other two that you mentioned could be really big hits with the general public. Heretic by A24. This will have its world premiere at TIFF. And, you know, that trailer stars a really creepy Hugh Grant, who invites two Mormon missionaries into his home who attempt to convert him. And it turns into this like rat maze, like find your way out of this house. Very creepy. I am excited for it. I think we've seen him recently, like in Knives Out, playing these like campy characters, and Paddington, but something darker is also exciting. And then Red One, you know, we have to talk about Christmas on the pod. We have a lot of other November releases that we haven't mentioned. Meet Me Next Christmas, The Best Christmas Pageant Ever, Hot Frosty. And this one,
Hot Frosty,
also also sounds campy. It stars The Rock and Chris Evans, who team up in trying to rescue Santa after he's kidnapped. Santa, played by J.K. Simmons. But it also stars Kiernan Shipka, Lucy Liu, Bonnie Hunt, Mary Elizabeth Ellis, and Nick Kroll. And this was just interesting to me because it's, quote, seen as the first of a potential franchise, reimagining holiday mythology, unquote. So I think it could be a big release. This is Amazon MGM.
No comment from me on that one.
I know. I'm just like, okay. We will see how it goes. I think, though, getting into our last big collection of movies, December, we always have good December releases every year. This first one is one of my most anticipated, especially after that trailer came out. I just have no idea what to make of it. And that is Mariel Heller's Night Bitch. This will be in theaters, released by Searchlight, December 6th. It just premiered at TIFF last night, and this stars Amy Adams. And this is based on the novel by Rachel Yoder, and it's about this woman who's an artist and a mother. She's a stay-at-home mom who's, I think, a bit dissatisfied with being a stay-at-home mom and is kind of adjusting to that life. And she starts to turn into a dog. So it has a very surreal tone. There's a little bit of magical realism. It's very satirical. What do you guys think of this one?
I'm very excited. I'm a huge Amy Adams fan, and I don't think we're going to get a more daring performance, it looks like. I haven't seen it yet, but if I remember correctly in the book, we see her like pooping in a front lawn and like acting like a dog and eating out of a dog bowl. So it's like, if that's how far they go with this, then it's a big swing. So I'm eager to see it.
Wow. I think I'm really shocked by the reviews saying that, you know, don't watch the trailer because it's nothing like that. So I think that's exciting because it plays and feels like, I don't know, some like rompy comedy almost. It's not the serious, really incredible acting like we've seen from Amy Adams and something like The Master, but people are saying that it's a performance like that. And, you know, looking at Mariel Heller, her last two theatrical films did receive acting nominations. So I think that could play really well with the Academy too. And Amy Adams is an Academy favorite, I would say, just, or maybe it's just she's one of our favorites, but I'm excited to see her.
I would lean there.
Literally do anything. They appreciate her, but they haven't given her a win yet. And, you know, maybe this is their chance.
Yeah. Famously snubbed for Arrival.
Mm. It's interesting you bring up the trailer because the whole time I was watching it, I was waiting it to have like a tonal shift. Like I thought they were purposely doing like a parody or something and then the trailer would go another way. But it just kept going with that broad comedy the whole time.
Yeah.
But I've also heard that it's like that's kind of misrepresenting it.
Well, I saw with Nigel on the red carpet last night that they talked to Amy and she brought her daughter, which I think is a really cool experience to have, especially with a movie about motherhood, and her sharing that with her own daughter live at a premiere is just mind-boggling.
I need a post-mortem of the daughter's reaction to seeing right
yes, me too, especially if it goes as far as the book does, which I hope it does.
Next we have Mufasa, The Lion King. So this is the live action sequel to The Lion King by Disney, out on December 20th. This one, the reason I'm most excited for it is because it's directed by Barry Jenkins, but also voiced by Kelvin Harrison Jr., Beyonce, Mads Mikkelsen, Blue Ivy Carter, her making her debut, Seth Rogen, Billy Eichner, and more. So it looks to be like a prequel, and Rafiki relaying the legend of Mufasa to lion cub Kiara, daughter of Simba and Nala. So it's told in flashbacks and it introduces Mufasa as an orphan cub until he meets Taka, the heir to a royal bloodline. So it has a lot of those touchstone Lion King action, adventure, probably musical, you know, as we have talked about trailers to be. Also Beyonce and Blue Ivy, you know, kind of expect that too, or hope for that. But this, I think, will play very well on a huge screen. I'm hesitant, but I will probably go see this.
I don't think it's a spoiler that the Taka character is Scar. Like, it's about their falling out.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think the cast they've assembled and the visuals. The problem I had with the last one, which was, like, what, Disney's biggest movie ever? Like, it was a huge hit. It was just, like, rehashing of the same thing. So the fact that this is, like, an all-new story, all-new songs, like, there's something exciting to me about it, and the just Barry Jenkins is an unusual pick for it. I don't think Blue Ivy and Beyonce, they sound more like a bookend at the beginning and the end. I don't think they're going to be in it throughout. But as long as they're taking what was good about the other one and then making it new and original, then I'm here for it.
Yeah, I think it'll be an improvement on that 2019 one, which was basically, if you make Lion King, a movie that we loved growing up, one of the best Disney animated films, and you just turn it into a Windows screensaver, it will be better than this. Barry Jenkins, I think, will not do that. Yeah, I think that a lot of the conversation around the movie will just be, because it'll undoubtedly make a lot of money. I think the audience is there, but it will just be, what did Barry Jenkins bring to this? Because we have so many of those auteurs who turn to Disney, or they end up getting stuck there, making a Disney film, making a Marvel film, like we think about Chloe Zhao with The Eternals. So I'm hopeful that he's able to bring his signature style to it a little bit if he can.
And I guess we'll have to have that conversation if this is like suddenly awards level. Like, are we going to have to call this an animated movie in that category?
Mm-hmm. Next, we have one of my most anticipated on this whole list. We have Baby Girl, which is in theaters on Christmas. This is an A24 release directed by Helena Ryan, who did Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. Stars Nicole Kidman, recent Volpe Cup winner for Best Actress at the Venice Film Festival. Also stars Harris Dickinson and Antonio Banderas. This is an erotic thriller where Nicole Kidman plays a CEO and she starts having an affair with a younger intern who's played by Harris Dickinson. I can't wait for this. I'm so excited for Nicole's performance. I think especially how she's been talking about it at the press conference at Venice and just in interviews around like how risky it is and the power that she found within herself and playing this character. I love when Nicole Kidman does those more out there risky roles. I mean, some of my favorite performances ever for her, Eyes Wide Shut, Birth. She's one of our best working actresses.
This movie just feels like it was manufactured for me, like everything about it. Like, I'm suspicious there's like a hidden mic somewhere in my apartment because everything about it, I need to see it ASAP.
I think the Volpe win for her was just magnificent. And I was almost expecting like maybe Julianne Moore and Tilda sharing that prize. But this I'm very excited for. You know, we love a little erotic thriller and Nicole looking just absolutely stunning at her press conference for this movie at Venice. I am just so floored by her and really happy that she's given us so much the past couple of years. So I'm ready for it. I'm ready for, what does Harris say? Doesn't he say like good girl or something at one point? It's just,
I'm ready for all of
it. It's going to be a hot room, a hot theater. Mm-hmm. Next, we have another star performance. We'll see how it plays, but it's a complete unknown. This is by Searchlight, also out on Christmas. Directed by James Mangold, starring Timothy Chalamet as Bob Dylan, and then Edward Norton and Elle Fanning in supporting roles. But this is set in New York in the early 60s, following a 19-year-old Minnesota musician, Bob Dylan, and his rise as a folk singer. So biopics, especially with Timothy, who's been in the actor race before, you know, is this his time? That's probably an annoying conversation we'll have throughout the season, but he always delivers. And I think, you know, that's something to look forward to. James Mangold, maybe not nominated for the last Indiana Jones movie, but his movies have been nominated before. So we'll see.
He has such an odd track record with his movies, but Walk the Line seems the normal comparison to this one, which was, as we remember, celebrated. So as long as it's to that level, which is debatably good or bad. There's a weird thing in the trailer talking about like his singing where I can hear Timmy, but I can hear Bob Dylan. I don't know if they're mixing vocals, but it's really interesting.
Yeah, I like that this will focus on a specific period of time in Dylan's career, and it's not going to try to do the whole cradle to grave thing where we have aging makeup on Timmy or anything like that. I feel like I like that it's on a specific era. And to me, we already have a great Bob Dylan movie in I'm Not There from Todd Haynes. And then Inside Llewyn Davis, my favorite Coen Brothers movie, is sort of Dylan adjacent or tackling that same period. So I always think, you know, do we need this? Probably not, but I'll go see it. I think the interesting thing to talk about, and we'll, like you said, Nick, talk about this all season with Timothy, is that he could be in the race against Adrian Brody for The Brutalist, a movie that we're not talking about today because it doesn't have a release date yet. But Adrian Brody is the youngest winner of Best Actor. He won when he was 29 years old, and he won just 22 days before his 30th birthday. If Timothy Chalamet wins the Oscar over Adrian Brody, he will beat that record by mere days, which is crazy because he'll also be 29, but he won't be quite as close to his 30th birthday as Adrian Brody was when he won.
Interesting.
So we'll see.
I feel like we have years and decades of good Timmy performances to come. So I hope this doesn't steal the show, but I could be wrong.
I know. I think so, too. And he would have been a good winner for Call Me By Your Name, even younger. So our last big movie we have is Nosferatu, another one of my most anticipated of the year. This is also coming out on Christmas. Focus Features. This is directed by Robert Eggers. I love his movies. It stars Bill Skarsgård, Willem Dafoe again, Lily Rose Depp, Nicholas Hoult, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, and more. And this is, of course, about our Transylvanian vampire who stalks a haunted young woman in 19th century Germany. And we covered Nosferatu, the silent film, last year. So we are ready for this. How do you guys feel about this one to end the year?
This is 100 years after the other one, right? That was like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm excited, if only to give Lily Rose Depp another vehicle, because she was great in one of the worst shows ever, The Idol. So
yes,
I'm so excited for her to have a chance, and then Bill Skarsgård to get to do another weird out there monster, which I don't believe they've given away what he looks like. And I hope they keep it a secret, long leg style, and like let us see it in the theater. But all the hype I'm seeing in interviews of them saying they're making vampires terrifying again and that stuff has me intrigued.
Me too. I think Twilight really changed that for our generation a bit, making them not scary anymore. But I have faith in Eggers to do that again. And yeah, like we said, I hope they keep what he looks like a secret. We right now just have a shadow, which I think is perfect. Like, let's just keep it shadow until we get the full movie.
Yeah, I can't wait for this. This is an interesting Christmas release. I'm surprised it's not coming out sooner for Halloween. This movie is one of many remakes or reimagining, so I'm excited what Eggers adds to that. And I think expanding on the story and certain characters that we had in the original movie that we haven't really seen much of since. So I think giving the other actors some more time to shine and really show what this world is like. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that this is one of those like hidden musicals where they don't want us to know it's a musical and we're going to see vampires singing in this gothic era.
Willem Dafoe having a song. I can see it now.
Also, fun to mention is that some people are calling this a Barbenheimer of exes of Timmy and Lily Rose. They're a complete un-Nosferatu. So let's.
Oh my God.
Baby girl. Someone come up with like a good threesome name.
Oh my gosh, Baby Girl, threesome is probably perfect for Baby Girl, but that one coming out on Christmas also is a little funny to me. I'm going to get the whole family together to go see.
Right.
I know. You think of like grandparents who end up going to Baby Girl. Like that is just, it's so funny. It's a story waiting to happen.
Some other releases we have this month. We have Unstoppable, Y2K, The Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim, Kraven the Hunter, Sonic the Hedgehog 3, and The Room Next Door. That one I mentioned previously by Pedro Almodovar just won the Golden Lion at Venice, which is its biggest prize, which makes me really excited for this movie. There are some reviews saying that it's more of like a career win, but I think with Julianne Moore and Tilda Swinton, I adore them, love their acting. I can't wait to see them. And it's this really touching movie about death and life and how that process comes about and how you handle that as partners or friends and family. And oh my God, it's just, it's going to be an intense movie.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait for it. Tilda Swinton and Julianne Moore, two of my favorite working actresses, maybe top five. And I love Pedro Almodovar, so this is right up there near the top of my list. We have to spend a minute, I think, before we wrap up, talking about Unstoppable, because Ben, you mentioned this before we hit record, but we here at Oscar Wilde love a little Bennifer moment. And there's, of course, more drama this year, but Jennifer Lopez has, what I've heard from Tiff, is a great role here, a strong performance, and Ben Affleck and Matt Damon are involved, which is a little Challengers-like in my mind. That's just how I like envisioning it. But I'm excited to see this.
Yeah, I mean, her being snubbed for Hustlers will always be top of my like grievances for the Oscars. So maybe this will be a correction and we can squeeze her into supporting. But it's an inspiring true story and one of those crowd pleaser movies. But yeah, Ben and Matt are among the producers from their artist equity company. I think he also has another J-Lo movie that'll be probably next year that he produced. So
Oh my God.
He skipped Tiff, she went, and Matt Damon went. So clearly she's behind this full swing and wants it to be a moment.
I'm rooting for her.
The other one I mentioned, Kraven the Hunter, it's a Marvel movie starring Aaron Taylor Johnson, mostly just fighting and looking insanely hot. But that's the second time we've mentioned him. And I think another one is The Fire Inside. This is another Amazon MGM film. It premiered at TIFF yesterday as of recording. And the initial reviews were just really praising Ryan Destiny as having a Star is Born performance and includes Brian Tyree Henry. It's written by Barry Jenkins and directed by Rachel Morrison, who is the cinematographer on Mudbound, which was she was nominated for at the Oscars. And then she was also the DP on Black Panther. So I don't know what to make of this movie. I think now with reviews that helps, but I'm excited. And I think it could be another big awards player with a late release.
I'm excited to see that too. Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining us today. We loved having you on Oscar Wilde. I think to wrap up, which movie that we talked about today are you most excited to see? If you could just pick one.
It's Baby Girl all the way. But also, we didn't talk about like Maria, Queer, these other movies that don't have release dates yet. But those are also up there.
Yeah. I was thinking of that too, of like if there are others that we didn't talk about that you want to see. Those were the ones too for me, like thinking about ones that don't have confirmed release dates yet that we're just waiting on. Maria, I can say I can't wait for everyone to see it because Angelina Jolie, the performance she gives in it, I will be thinking about it and talking about it for the rest of the year.
All of those movies you mentioned we'll be mentioning next week on our New York and festival preview, but we'll be seeing them at New York. I don't know if you'll be there too, Ben, but yeah, lots to see. We can all join up and see what we think of those. Mm-hmm. I think some that I'm excited for, ones that we didn't talk about today, I guess the number one on that list, which I've mentioned on the pod before, Wallace and Gromit, Vengeance Most Foul. It'll be on Netflix on Christmas, and it's premiering at the AFI Fest. It's their closing movie, so I'm excited for another stop-motion film. We briefly mentioned Memoir of a Snail earlier from October. That's another one that has some Academy love from the creators of Marion Max and Harvey Crumpet, which I saw when I was younger. So I don't know, lots of animated features this year and stop motion in particular, which I love. We'll be getting a new Laika next year. So I can't wait.
Wait, why didn't I know about this Wallace and Gromit movie? I had no idea.
No one's talking about it yet.
I know. I can't wait to see it. I love Wallace and Gromit. And I think because it's one of those that's doing a really weird, or it was initially like releasing in the UK earlier and then releasing in the States, maybe early 2025. I think that was their original plan. But now that it's going to be at AFI, Like, can this enter our animated feature conversation? Because I love Wallace and Gromit. I think for mine too, like my one that I'm most excited for everything we've talked about today is probably, it probably is Baby Girl now. The more and more I think about it, like an erotic thriller with Nicole Kidman, if she can get the Diane Lane Unfaithful nomination of this year, I will be so happy for her. Or Nosferatu. I would say those two of like what we talked about. And then The Brutalist and Queer. Those are mine that don't have release dates yet. And I just am so looking forward to those screenings at New York Film Festival to see what those movies are about and how much I like them. I love Luca Guadagnino specifically. So I feel like Queer will be one of my favorites. But everything about The Brutalist, comparing it to There Will Be Blood and Tar, I'm ready.
And there's an intermission, right? Or at least that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, can't wait for that.
An overture, an epilogue, everything.
Oh my God. I love all of that like old school stuff. Ugh.
Yeah. I can't wait for Omar Apollo in Queer. I think of what we talked about today, I would have to go with We Live in Time. I'm ready for like a Kleenex movie. And obviously I want to see a lot of these, but I love those two actors too, and I can't wait to see what they do.
Well, Ben, thank you again so much for joining us. If you could let our listeners know where they can find you on socials, where they can find your work, that would be great.
Yeah, at people.com. You can just Google my name and find all the stories there, or just check out the homepage and just stumble upon us. And then also on Instagram and anywhere else, it's at Ben Van Hoos.
Thank you so much. Well, next time on Oscar Wilde, as Nick alluded to, we will be going fully into festival season. We'll be talking about Telluride, Venice, and TIFF, doing recaps on those, and then doing a little preview of New York Film Festival.
I can't wait for that. Ben, yes, thank you so much for joining us. Feel free to rate, review, and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Oscar Wilde Pod. We have bonus content on patreon.com/OscarWilde.
Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.